So when Maria and I approached these factories, they just were not interested in doing business with us, and we got flat nose. There was no price we could pay.
They say, well, guys, really sorry. We literally don't have enough people to develop your sample. Please wait a week, 2 weeks, a month.
It took us a year to get from the point of providing a prototype to receiving a sample that resembled that prototype.
Welcome to episode 3 of our special podcast series documenting the incredible journey of bra tech startup The One2.
Last time, you heard how Margot and Maria successfully closed their first fundraising round. They'd spent weeks pitching to rooms full of men, convincing them that this is a real problem for women and a huge opportunity up for grabs to re-engineer bras with women's needs front of mind.
Margot and Maria are clearly successful salespeople because they raised the money they needed to bring this brand to life, and they were finally in a position to turn their prototype into a final product, something that Margot had been working towards for years.
So this industry, typically they make one bra. They make it in a size 12B or 34B, and they then find a 12B fit model who's picked for being the perfect 12B. And they try it on her, and if it fits her, they computer grade the rest of the sizes.
Making a bra is really hard.
And as a result, the industry cuts corners. They put all their energy into creating this great 12B. But as a result, everybody else, like the further away we are from 12B, the more likely it is that we are trying something that is so far away from any normal woman's body who's that size because it hasn't been developed for us. What happens is when we turn up at that department store, we don't know what size we should be looking for. We like often struggle to find the size that we even, you know, like even the one that we think that we need, it's hard to find it amongst the like masses of bras. The products that they have, most of them are poorly engineered from poor quality materials.
You start walking around the streets and you sort of start seeing women wearing bras. You know, sometimes you kind of can see it more or less through the clothes, especially in the back. And you can literally see every second, every third woman is clearly wearing her own size.
We are all suffering in this product.
I've always found that bra shopping has always just been like almost like a game of compromise where, you know, if I find a bra that has a decent fit that I feel kind of supported in, it's almost like a necessary trade-off that it'll have underwires that kind of dig in. And for the most part, I think I've just put up with it just solely because I don't know better. Like I've never knew that better even existed.
My personal experience with bras was very frustrating. I've never found an underwired bra that fitted me well, so I just ended up wearing sports bra all the time.
I fall into the category of women who have pretty much started wearing sports bras exclusively just because the search for a bra that fits, is comfortable and supportive, and is also cute has felt next to impossible. And so I have kind of fallen into the sports bra wearing club.
And I just feel like as women, we should not be experiencing daily discomfort. It almost feels like a human rights violation. Like we have enough to deal with.
Fortunately for the team, they were not starting from zero. Margot had already spent years and hundreds of thousands of dollars developing a prototype for a bra and testing it on women of all shapes and sizes.
I was really confident in the product that I had for a small to medium sized bust. I had a really fantastic structure. I was really happy with the straps. I was really happy with the cups. But I also knew there was things that we could do to make it better. And one of those things was making it a more sustainable product. Another thing was I wanted it to feel out of the box different to anything else you had in your wardrobe. Like I wanted women to put it on and for it to feel so soft and like a hug, you know, and I wanted to make the smoothest, most seamless product out there. And then there was this other customer that I saw a lot of, and she was really big busted. And she really, really had a problem. She would say, I'm happy to pay $200. Can you please serve me? I wanted a little bit more coverage. They all were consistently saying, we don't want any extra bulk. We want support, but we want it to be as thin as it possibly can be. And that was their main requirement. Super, super slim and supportive and their size. And so we set out to create that product as well.
What was the process like of taking that prototype and then building upon that?
As part of my quest to find a bra to meet my own needs, I genuinely scoured the world, and we started with what I thought was a really solid base. I had a cup that was working really well. We were going to tweak the grading a little bit. We had a pattern that was working really well. We had a manufacturer who I'd worked with before and who'd been highly precise, and our ambitions and timeframes were based around this. Then COVID hits.
Just as they were making some real progress in developing their product, factories shut down.
Supply chains ground to a halt, and no one would return their calls.
To my absolute shock, when COVID hit, it obviously took a lot of capacity out. People were sick, especially in China. They were sick or they were in lockdown. For the cup supplier who I'd previously worked with on a minimum of like 1,000 units, they were now telling us we needed to buy 10,000 units if we wanted to produce with them. And so suddenly, Maria and I, having promised these really ambitious timeframes to our investors, don't have a factory. We don't have cups, which are a really significant development effort because they're a three-dimensional object. And we are back to the drawing board.
What did you do next after that conversation where they were like, sorry, nah? How do you go about finding a new overseas manufacturer when you cannot leave the house?
So when Maria and I approached these factories, they just were not interested in doing business with us, and we got flat no's. There was no price we could pay.
What ended up happening is a friend of mine knew someone at one of the factories in Sri Lanka. And interestingly enough, it was one of the really well-known factories, world-leading, industry-leading. And so the more we were learning about this manufacturer, the more excited both of us was getting, because it was literally the cream de la cream of the industry. But to even imagine that they can work with us straight away was just a bit too much. But what the hell? Nobody is saying yes to us. And so through our connections, we basically just set up a call with someone there. And then we basically ended up pitching to them and to their board to present our case. I think it was partly the right time, the right place. They had capacity during COVID and they had space to take on new work. But lo and behold, a couple of months into the search, we had them locked in as our manufacturer.
And they said, like, the reason was, which was so exciting for us as well, is they were just so excited by the craftsmanship and like rigor that we were bringing to the brand. And, you know, even as a leading manufacturer, they could see that we were world class in what we were bringing.
If only we knew how hard it's going to be.
So how many samples did you have made over the course of getting to the point where you found a design that worked across different cup sizes?
We did more than 60 samples across multiple sizes. And this is, again, against usual 12B focus. The challenge of that was we were in Australia. Our manufacturers in Sri Lanka, ideally, when you develop a physical product and especially such complicated product, which requires reviewing of the fit in person, you would jump on a plane, you would go there, and you'd spend a couple of weeks fitting every day, adjusting every day, refining, moving on. We couldn't go to Sri Lanka for basically a year and a half. And Sri Lanka on their own were going through multiple lockdowns. COVID was pretty hard for them at one point. What it meant for us, not only were we not able to go and meet our new team and our new partner in person, we have to develop everything online. And then they have sample room shortages, meaning when we need to develop a sample, they say, well, guys, really sorry. We literally don't have enough people to develop your sample. Please wait a week, 2 weeks, a month. And so the development time continues to expand. It's basically ended up being a year and a half on calls all the time. We would receive a sample. We would find a fit model in Australia. We would send detailed feedback back to London. Then they will send detailed feedback back to us. Then we'll send it back to Sri Lanka. And so the journey continued.
So I'm here with my young family and Sri Lanka starts accepting people in. And at that point, there wasn't very much COVID in New South Wales, basically at all. And Sri Lanka still had a lot. But I convinced my husband that we should book for the whole family to go to Sri Lanka for the whole of January, because he basically had this gap between jobs. And I was like, this is the only opportunity I'm going to have to go. I still had a one-year-old, right? And so my whole family jumped on a plane to Sri Lanka. Turns out once I got over there, we actually had a massive outbreak at home and there was actually less COVID over there in Sri Lanka, but we didn't know that at the time. And it just transforms everything once you can be there in person, where you can have a fit session together and look at what the issues are together and point out a problem in person. And it was this absolutely amazing experience where we very much forced this visit on our supplier, where I was like, this is when I can come. We need to make it happen. And to their credit, they would have lines of people from different roles in the factory waiting to come and see me to get decisions on different things. And we did that every day for a week. But that's just the number of decisions and small things that we needed to sign off on was enough that there was probably 10 different people who were just constantly queuing up to come in, check in, make a decision. On to the next one. Signing off on the wire, heat transfer label that goes on the back of the hook and eye. So there was multiple different colours, multiple different printing media. Sign off on the artwork to go back on
showing
that.
Me how different fabrics were moulding.
How they were responding to the elastic type that we were putting on them. There was just a lot of specifications that having the ability to be in person to turn around quickly and having them motivated to turn it around quickly because tomorrow I was going to come back into the building and say, oh, did you get that done? And then in the next 6 months, Maria went twice after that as well.
Everything has been delaying for such a long time and we just needed to finally bring it to market. So having Margot there and feeling the difference, right, and how much faster everything started to move, it was really clear to us that it's important to be there. So once Margot has done her shift, it was my turn. So next month, I jumped on the plane and I went there. We spent 3 weeks there, basically with the purpose of finishing all of our portfolio of products. And so basically every second day, I would be coming to the office and it would be fitting the product. I would be one of the fit models myself, which was also really interesting. The first week when I was there, I think I was still a little bit shy. I wasn't even openly saying that I'm one of our fit models and we're going to keep it professional. And then it was obvious that we needed to test the samples that they were taking out. At first, I was like, okay, well, I'm happy to try it on. And then they were like, okay, well, are you sure? Are you sure? And I was like, well, of course. I mean, while I'm here. By the time I was there, it was just so fascinating. It was like the whole team, I'm there in my underwear and just in a bra, you know, testing everything.
On the video, and I'm like, Maria, can you please bend down and touch the ground and see if the underwear right in? Like,
literally. And then, you know, she says, okay, now do star jumps. Okay, how is everything moving? And I was like, sure, anything that needs to be done for this to come out, I'll do it. They call our bra the luxury bra because it takes so much time and it's so heavy on craftsmanship. They also call it half an hour bra. And so to give you an idea, on average, the standard bra take 6 to 10 minutes to put together and ours takes 30 plus minutes. Some people from the industry, they look at us and say, okay, what are you guys doing? This is crazy. But that's fundamentally how much time it takes to put together the bra. Our fabric is fantastic fabric that's relatively hard to work with. And so all of this adds up, right? But it really is a crafted bra that takes literally half an hour.
Here's the One2's technical designer, Laura. She's sharing why their bra is so innovative. It's a well-engineered product unlike anything on the market.
There is discrete additional structure within the bra wings, but also the dynamics of the bra are acutely engineered for the most flattering look. From the coverage and the profile of the cup to the coverage at the underarm, the shape of the back, they've developed tirelessly to achieve invisible innovation, and it blends such lightness with comfort and support.
So how long did it take versus how long you were expecting it to take due to COVID?
Realistically, it took us 18 months because of COVID. We already had a prototype, especially for one bra, right? So I think we were originally hoping it would take us, 6 months or something like that? And it turned into 18 months.
We're not an institution. We're not Victoria's Secret. We don't have multiple teams on every part of it. And the other thing for the larger busted bra, because we were really prioritizing making it a really lightweight cup. And due to COVID restrictions, they said you can only pick two cups to be tested. And so we prioritized two. The supplier had said, this will work for your size range. And I said, well, that would be amazing because they're so light. Like, can they really hold a 42E? But the manufacturer said, yes, that's within the range. Lo and behold, a couple of months later, they've produced samples. They've gone to the factory in Sri Lanka. They've put them into a bra. They've come to us. We put them on a fit model. And they were not supporting anything, right? And so this is now at least 3 months of development. And we have to say, these are absolutely unworkable. We need to go back to the drawing board. Let's review more cup options. Fortunately, we ended up co-collaborating to develop this very specific cup with like a built-in, I really wanted a built-in sling, which is basically a rigid piece of fabric that goes from the underwire under the breast up the side of the cup. And we were able to find a way to mold that into the cup. So it's this three-zonal cup that's like more rigid where you need the most support and then more flexible where it's less required. So we ended up with this like much better component, but we had to completely write off. It was probably even more than 3 months, right?
It was more than 3 months.
The product development was taking time, a long time. And it wasn't just Maria and Margot who were frustrated. They had to manage the expectations of all of their investors too.
They're like, oh, what are you doing? Why can't you just sign off? And we're like, literally, no one will wear this. No one will buy this. It is atrocious. And they're like, well, how did you end up in that situation? We're like, we had to prioritize too. These were the things that we were prioritizing, that it was lightweight. And this is where we ended up. In a non-COVID context, we would have been able to produce 4, 5, 6 different prototypes and not have lost that time.
It must have been hard managing all of those expectations of your investors and those conversations, and also managing your own expectations, because you had the expectation this would be quick. You had a prototype. You'd done so much of the research and work up front. Tough?
Yeah. You learn patience is a virtue. It was really tough. Yeah, exactly. It was just really, I think, emotionally and psychologically tough, in addition to, right, developing the product and building a new business and testing and hiring the team and prioritizing. It's all of this plus that.
And we'd raised all this money and we thought we were going to have a product by a certain date. And so we spent money according to that time schedule, and then it completely blew out. And so the outcome of that is that we're much leaner now. Like, we just spent money in a way that we shouldn't have had we had full visibility to that time frame, or any inkling, I should say, as to what could actually happen.
How did that feel? Often in the early stages of a business, it's all about pace, right?
And it's like, all about pace.
The fundraising was quick in 2 weeks. It's all about velocity.
Yeah.
How did that personally feel, having that time scale a little bit out of your control?
It's pretty frustrating.
Really frustrating and stressful. We have both signed up for doing something quickly because of the limited capacity in the sample room and the fact that at my original cup supplier wouldn't supply us cups. It took us a year to get from the point of providing a prototype to receiving a sample that resembled that prototype.
Both of us signed up for a fast-paced business, right? And both of us struggled with that. And both of us struggled with the idea of uncertainty and how much time it will take and how much more. So it's just a whole mix-mash of factors that created that tension and a sense of frustration and pain. But fundamentally, both of us believed that we're doing something great and it's worth it. Keep pushing. And so you find yourself being in a state of like just one foot against the other, just in front of the other. Just keep going, keep going. We'll need to get to the next milestone.
Did your manufacturers ever turn to you and go, what you're trying to do is ridiculous? We can't actually do what you're requesting or requiring us to do.
They were kind of really clear that they believe in the product. They have confidence in the product. So we always felt really, really supported.
It's more the process, right? And how many rounds of iteration and how many rounds of iteration of adjustments of pads we asked, right? And sometimes it was really last minute because we identified an issue that wasn't there before and we had to turn it around. And so there was a lot of see that we continued to put into the relationship. It created some tension here and there, but that's what needs to happen.
What was that feeling like the moment that you got that final sample and like it was like tick, 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 everything was perfect, everything was right, and you were actually ready to press that green button on production?
Oh, it felt amazing.
Maria always feels amazing. I always feel scared and see all the problems. So Maria's exactly. like, this is great. And I'm like, do you think this is going to go wrong? Do you think this is going to go wrong? Do you think this is going to go wrong?
And that's why this works.
I'm like, I think we should email them and tell them to be careful about this, 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 this. But yeah. So that's the space that I'm in. Unfortunately, it's hard to be celebratory.
Margot, you mentioned that iteration two, the 1-2 bra, integrating a more sustainable practice into this business is really critical.
It's really important for both of us. So me having come back from New York, where I was really exposed to the fast fashion industry and really understanding how this works and how many things actually don't work and how destructive it is, I got passionate about exploring this area more and figuring out how can you make a brand more sustainable and what does sustainability means in the world of greenwashing. And so when we both started talking about this, I was really excited that we had so much similar interest in social responsibility and environmental sustainability. And our starting point is across multiple areas. The first and really exciting is the fabric itself. So when I met Margot one day, she brings this little swatch that she found years and years ago at a trade show in Lyon of a fabric that she really liked. Basically, it's a byproduct of organic cotton. So it's to be sustainable fabric, what can we do with it? And so we went to the manufacturer, to the supply of this fabric, started exploring the idea of using that. Turns out that nobody have ever used this fabric in the lingerie space. It's a pretty difficult fabric to work with. But of course, we go for it because we want to have a bra that is comfortable, beautiful, and sustainable. And so this beautiful fabric is a byproduct of organic cotton that feels really silky. So of course we go for it. And so that's one of the sustainability credentials. And then another thing that is really important to us is the partnerships and everybody we work with, right? So really obsessive about who we work with, who is a supplier, what is their sustainability agenda? What are they doing on their own? Do they have the same values that we do? So social responsibility is another really interesting area that we are really passionate about. What are we starting with? For every bra purchased, we donate 2 pairs of underwear to women fleeing violence in the areas where we're based, which for us, it's Australia and Sri Lanka. Both countries have very strong domestic violence issues, and we really want to educate ourselves more and more on that topic and understand how much more can we really be involved and how much we can help. So sustainability is a journey. Social responsibility is a journey. We're not perfect, but we are learning and we'll continue to learn and deliver value where we can. It's an absolutely fundamental for us.
So during the time that it was taking for you to develop the product, but also building the tech product in the background, the personalization algorithm, can you tell us a little bit about that process?
We partnered with a technology company in Melbourne to develop the build. But it's been a journey as well. I think all technology builds are. And the goal was really ambitious, where we were taking what I was doing before, which was fitting people virtually and analyzing their results myself. And so the algorithm, what it's designed to do is take your experience as a bra wearer. And so it's like, okay, you wear a bra over the course of a day and it steps you through. Do your straps fall off or dig in? Do your wires dig in? Where do they dig in? Does the band dig in? A lot of bra issues are about digging in. where are the friction points that are a problem? And, you know, when do they emerge for you? And based on that and understanding what size you're currently wearing, what brand you're currently wearing, it recognizes a pattern to say, oh, it looks like you need a larger cup with the same band, or it looks like you need a smaller band and a smaller cup. Or it looks like you're actually your cup, you need a smaller band and 2 cup sizes bigger. Like you need a fundamentally very different size product to what you're wearing. It's a very kind of deep technology to be able to weigh up different factors against each other and really consider how they can work together. And I don't think in the beginning I appreciated the level of nuance and how much I was actually thinking through how to get people to the specific results they had. we prioritized getting something built, looked good, but the results were just completely wrong. It wasn't even interpreting your size in the correct way, like your current size. To provide a little bit more depth around it, like the counterintuitiveness of bras is you can be in too big of a band. And I've been experiencing this recently. I tried a band size up in our actual bra and I like keep getting it mixed up with my actual size because it's very similar, right? And I just accidentally throw it in my drawer and then I put it on and it feels the same in the morning. But by the end of the day, the band is digging in. And it's just such a crazy counterintuitive thing because the band is digging in because it's too big. And basically, it has a little bit more space. And so it moves further up your back where there's more soft tissue and then it digs into the back. There's a lot of signs like that where you need to understand them together to get to a diagnostic. So it's like, obviously, the band digging in can be because the band is too small. And so you have to read what else is going on. Like, is the whole wire digging in evenly and the band is digging in at the back? That probably is a band that's too small. But if the back is just digging in and then the bra cups are starting to move around, that's almost certainly a band that's too big. And the algorithm works by identifying a whole lot of patterns like that in terms of how your experience interacts with the bra.
For me, again, kind of not coming from this industry, it's just continuous appreciation how confusing and how complicated it actually is to find a good fit and how women are just set up for failure and how difficult it is to untangle it. And that's why it's so exciting that we're offering something so cool.
The process of finding a bra that fits is kind of overwhelming. I didn't really know where to start or what to do to ensure that I had a good fit. And I think that that was one of my favorite parts about this process is going through the test and how I could send an email off and how responsive Maria and Margot were to get back to me about my concerns or just to raise questions even based on my test. They were just very helpful with the whole fit process, very responsive. And then my bras came in and fit perfectly. I was no longer wearing them around throughout the day and catching myself like adjusting the underwires, for example. So I learned what my new size actually is. And I now have two beautiful bras that fit and are comfortable. And I am very, very pleased.
I know that these bras are going to change the game.
The hope is that we can empower women with this education and understanding their experience rather than, again, you know, just saying, oh, here is your size.
After years and years of development, Margot and Maria had finally created what they'd set out to, a perfectly engineered bra for all of us.
Fundamentally, from an engineering perspective, our product does a few basics that very few items in a department store actually do. The elastic at the bottom runs all the way around the bra. There's no break in it. There's certainly not a tiny little finger wide piece of material attaching the two cups together. That is fundamentally unstable. The center, the bit in the center in the middle through to where the wings attach under your arms should be rigid mesh. So that shouldn't have stretch to it. We have two sets of flexible boning, which sit under the arm. Fundamentally, your bra is all about your cups supporting your breasts. And so it's like your cups are supporting your breasts. So then what needs to support your cups to do that? The underwire anchors the cup underneath the breast. And then the band should be where the majority of the support is holding that weight in place. And the role of the boning is to distribute the pressure from the elastic in an even way. And so it really helps to keep your wires very stable. And then with straps, our straps are all a little bit wider at the top, but they're a tapered thing, like they go in and then out again to still provide some kind of elegance and not look like 2 centimeter wide bulky straps, but still have a little bit more on the shoulder. Stability is the name of the game here.
So obviously you've raised money, you've been going through this development process with the physical product and the tech product, and then you decide to launch a Kickstarter. How come?
We plan to launch a Kickstarter, which is a pre-sale where people can purchase the product before we actually have it.
So after all of this time developing the product, developing the tech and pushing so hard to get to market, we finally were ready to photograph our samples and to launch our Kickstarter pre-sale campaign.
We had no idea how blown away we were going to be.
On our next episode with the 1-2.
It had taken us at this point nearly 2 years, and we finally have these beautiful samples.
We're setting really high, ambitious goals, strong timelines, and then we push, 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 push.
We were both constantly checking, like, how many units do we have left? Let's add one, let's add two, let's add five. That whole 30 days, we did not switch off, and we were in this state of, like, constant tension.